I'm a big proponent of that you can do anything with will, determination, hard work. I just don't think there's anything that can stop somebody if they've got will and they're willing to grow.
Hello, I'm Peyton Squires, and I'm the host of the podcast. This podcast is for those who are dissatisfied with where they are at in their life and career currently. I used to be one. When I got out of college with my master's degree, I started working in banking. I eventually moved to a Fortune 500 company. I quickly find out being an employee was not for me. I was bored out of my mind and did not like it whatsoever. Something eventually lit a fire under me. I started studying for the CPA exam, listening to podcasts, and reading books every day. By doing that, I had passed all four parts of the CPA exam in 8 months and quit my job. I opened up my own tax firm, having never been paid to do someone's taxes before. That was in 2014. Since then, I've consistently grown my business. Had a lot of success in other business ventures, including real estate, property management, among other things. And now I'm looking for a new venture. I want to help inspire you and other entrepreneurs to achieve their potentials and dreams, as well as learn from the stories of these entrepreneurs as to see what has gone well and what hasn't gone well for them. Let's go create a bunch of healthy, wealthy, and wise entrepreneurs. Hey guys, welcome to Behind Their Success podcast. I'm Peyton Squires, the host. Today we have on the program Bryant Dawson. Bryant Dawson is a former oil industry project manager turned real estate investor. He's built a massive rental portfolio with no end in sight. Bryant has a passion for helping others achieve their real estate investing goals through creative financing. He's a seasoned and passionate real estate professional with over 14 years of experience in the industry. He's a CEO and co-founder of Ingram Capital, leading the acquisition, remodel, renting, and selling of rental properties across multiple asset classes, including multifamily, mobile home parks, self-storage units, and I think recently car washes. He's on a mission to create value for investors, tenants, and communities by providing quality and affordable housing solutions, while at the same time generating attractive returns and opportunities for investors. Bryant, welcome on the show, my man.
Thank you so much for having me, Peyton. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, Bryant, take us back to the beginning. Give us a little bit of your background.
Yeah, so I guess my background realistically starts, you know, in a little town in southeast Missouri, right? So I started as a carryout boy in high school, making $5.15 an hour. And then me and my wife actually had both of our kids in high school, so I have to grow up pretty quick. I went into welding, learned how to weld, and started welding in oil and gas industry. Did that for quite a while, worked my way up into management, but always had this real passion for real estate. And I got willed a property whenever I was really young, and I understood at that point that I couldn't just have one property. And so I started investing at 19 years old. Wow. And did a really terrible job at that age, as you could imagine. And it wasn't until my early mid-20s that I really started getting focused on education of buying and selling real estate.
Yeah. You started off, you had two kids right in high school. Yeah. So tell me about the challenges of that.
Man, it's pretty tough. I mean, I look back on it now and it is surreal that we actually made it work. I'm
impressive.
I'm married to my high school sweetheart. My daughter just turned 18. My son's 16, fixing to be 17 here in a month or so. And I honestly don't know how we kept it all together. It was just drive and determination. We honestly didn't know any better. So
you got willed a property and you got into kind of welding and oil and gas. Tell me about some of your experiences down the oil and gas road.
Man, oil and gas is a crazy industry. It's like any other construction. The craziest part about it, you're working 12-hour days, 12 to 16-hour days, 7 days a week. So I work in facilities maintenance side. Mm-hmm. So we did turnaround work. And essentially what that means is they shut down a plant and you have X amount of days to fix it. They're working 24-hour shifts around the clock until you're finished. So you start to work yourself out of a job in a few months. So there's a tremendous amount of travel with it. You may not be in one place for more than 2 or 3 months at a time. And that was probably my biggest driving factor for wanting to grow a real estate portfolio, was I wanted to be able to take a month off if I wanted to and spend time with my family, because you just don't get to see your family much. You're working 84 to 100 hours a week. Mm-hmm. Even if they're with you, which mine traveled with me, you're always working. So,
yeah, if you're awake, you're working. I've had some experiences that, I mean, you know, as we're recording this, I'm in the middle of tax season. So, you know, I can certainly relate to the 80-100 hours a week and the struggle of wanting to be with the family, but at the same time knowing maybe there's seasons or what have you to where the work, there's time where you just needed more at work. And hopefully you've designed your way or designed your life or your business in a way that allows you to maybe get that time back in other seasons. You spent time in Saudi Arabia and just all over the place. You told me a couple few crazy stories over, you know, in Saudi Arabia. So, you know, you got the property when you were young. When did you say, you know, starting to learn and be more educated about the stuff? When do you feel like you really started to make that shift and really turn the real estate stuff into your career?
I always had older friends in the oil and gas industry, and they were always telling me, don't stay in this, get out. You've got to get out. It's a terrible life to live. And at that point, I had already had one investment property. I had the property that my grandparents had left me that I was trying to rent out. But every renter I had cost me about $10,000. I didn't actually make any money. And then I started really thinking about it at that point. So I need to figure out what this looks like. So in about 2014, I started really studying, understanding what rental property was. 2014 is whenever I really started taking the leap into rental ownership. And then from 2014 to 2016, I was buying a lot of portfolios all the way up till about 2019. I bought quite a few portfolios of properties.
Yeah. Listeners, don't let him downplay. He's, when he says portfolio properties, he's buying large deals, large multifamily deals and doing stuff all over the place, right?
Yeah, absolutely. At this point, we just turned our 1900th turn. We've got 7 or 8 underway right now, and we have about 35 units in our multifamily portfolio that we're turning as well. So we're still turning and burning.
Yeah. So let me highlight that. He said 1900. He has turned and flipped 1900 houses. And this is a guy that's coming from a background that had from a small town, had 2 kids while he was in high school. And Bryant Wright, you're 35 at this point?
35, yeah.
And you've built these companies despite all the challenges of your background, still pushed through and have accomplished, got quite the impressive resume.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm a big proponent of that you can do anything with will, determination, hard work. I see it every single day, business owners that I get to talk to. It's like understanding how they get to where they're at. There's a lot of hard work past that first million, you know.
Yeah. And you hear people say the first million is the hardest. And I would agree with that. The first million is the hardest. But it really is just, man, it's just the beginning. Like that you just realize, man, I'm starting to play the game. And there's a whole lot more levels to this.
Oh, yeah.
And the cool thing is, me and you are in kind of a mastermind networking group together. And being in that kind of group and surrounded by different entrepreneurs, you really get challenged and see people that may be at different levels in the different areas of life, and really, at least really motivates me to figure out how to pull that off too.
Yeah, it's truly inspiring. I try to surround myself with people that are smarter than me every day. Hence why I hang out with folks like you. Just the questions that get asked and get brought up. And if you're willing to stay vulnerable and say, hey, that's my fault. I understand. I get it. And then continue to grow. I just don't think there's anything that can stop somebody if they've got will and they're willing to grow.
Yeah. You've had quite a bit of success in the real estate world. What do you think is the number one skill that's led to that? What is your best skill that's led to your success?
I'm not afraid to get dirty. I'm not afraid of it. A lot of people come out and they grow out of the work part. And they don't want to do the work part anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm building my house right now. And like, I'm doing that. I could pay somebody else to do it, but I'm doing a lot of it myself just for the sheer fact that I want that pride. I want that thing. I don't know. It's just something inside of me. Some way I'm wired. Yeah. Probably. Or maybe there's a problem with it. I just don't know.
But we're all wired differently. And you're right there, too. There's certainly pros and cons to some of those things. You're extremely driven. And I share a lot of those characteristics, too, which leads to our certain successes in business. But at the same time, there's certainly downfalls, man. It's hard to ever shut it off or even feel content sometimes.
I had a big problem with that working in oil and gas. I would only sleep about 4 or 5 hours a night. Mm-hmm. And I did that. I was on that sleep regimen for about 12 years. Wow. And I think that obviously led to a lot of my success in the amount of units I was able to turn, because I never, whenever I left my oil and gas job, I didn't shut that. I didn't go back to a 40-hour week. I actually worked harder and more with house turns than I did oil and gas, I think.
Yeah. When it's interesting from an outside perspective, people may see where you're at, but they really don't see just the sheer amount of time and work that was put into, and for years, right? So you say something like 2014 before you really got really deep into it. You've been investing all this time in your business, working 80 hours a week for a decade. I talk about this with other guests on the podcast of how entrepreneurship can get marketed and as this, oh, this amazing, awesome thing, which it is, and there is freedom and whatever in it, but there's the other side of it, the real side of it, the day-to-day side of it, that the suck of it, right? The suck of just the sheer amount of work and the process and the mistakes and the setbacks. I think it's really important on, say, like podcasts like this and other areas where people are talking about entrepreneurship to really tell people about that and not paint a picture of some just amazing fairy tale, because that really doesn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, it's really tough. And people that generally make it in business, most don't, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a fact that most businesses fail. But I think that most entrepreneurs that make it can have battle stories, and those are the best. That was probably my favorite part about oil and gas. I remember whenever I was exiting oil and gas, I was standing with a bunch of my buddies that I'd worked with for years, and it was cold, like really cold. We were up near Minnesota border. It was snowing outside, very windy. The windshield was like 27 below. Mm. We're all standing there like in this little huddle with a little heater in the middle. And I was like, we'll remember this day forever. This sucks. This is terrible. And I've got one house that I remember a lot, but a lot of houses I remember, but I have one that I remember in particular. And that was, we had some tenants coming in on some short-term leases. And these short-term leases were a big part of our income at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And it's like on the come up. So any little bit of income that you can get, it's gold. And I remember I was laying tile in this house, and it was like, okay, we're just going to pull an all-nighter type situation. And I woke up in the garage floor, and I look up and I'm like, oh, we got the tile done. And I'd like lay down.
How far did I get before it fell asleep?
Yeah. Do I have to get back up and go at this again? Or can I lay here for a little bit longer? So,
yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. You know, same here. When you've been in business for a decade or so, we all got stories. We all got really interesting stories of scars and different clients in dealing with the public and all that comes with that. You can get some pretty wild stories.
Hey, quick ask from you guys. If you ever got any value from these podcasts, I kindly ask you to rate and review it. It really is the best way to help us grow and reach more people. We want to get as many healthy, wealthy, and wise entrepreneurs out there as possible. Thanks. Now to the show.
You told me your best skill is just really determination, grit, right? You're just willing to do whatever it takes. Tell me, what do you credit as the best decision you've ever made?
Getting started. 100%. I spent more than a couple years, honestly. From the time I was 19 till my early 20s, I spent that time contemplating whether I should or shouldn't.
Yep.
And if you sit back and contemplate, it doesn't really do a whole lot other than just confuse you. Like, just take action and move some stuff across the board and see if it works.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's big. I would say I did a lot of that early in my career too, even with running my business, even the first, I don't know, say 3 or 4 years, I was really good at gathering knowledge, right? Like, I always enjoy to read and gathering knowledge, but I didn't really have any execution power. Like, I was that guy that just, I wanted to learn everything to see if I could figure it all out before I got started, not realizing that you can't figure it out until you actually get started.
And honestly, like, you're not ready for all the information. If you had all the information at your fingertips, day one, likelihood is you wouldn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, for sure. And you wouldn't even begin to understand it. It just, you don't have the capability of doing that. Yeah, it's really important. Like podcasts like this and other podcasts and books and stuff, that's all that information is really important. And you should be constantly feeding yourself with that. But they say knowledge is power. It's not really power. Knowledge is like potential power. If you never put it to work, it's really useless.
Yeah, got to take action.
Yeah. I'm sure you've made many of these along the ways, but what's one big mistake you've made?
Man, I've made so many mistakes. I probably made every mistake that you can think of whenever it comes to housing. I think probably the biggest mistake that I made for many years, and I'm no longer making this mistake, but that was thinking that I had to do everything on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a lesson I'm learning myself still, as I've gone through different transition and kind of a big transition in my own business this year, is it's Peyton finally letting go of a lot of stuff. And that freaks me out, scares me. And that's a transition. And it, especially as an entrepreneur, that you built your own business, I've built my own business, that letting go of that, realizing that you're not naturally skilled at everything, right? You have certain skill sets and other people have other skill sets, and realizing that there's things that people are probably better at than you are, even despite it being your own business, and being able to be self-aware enough to realize that and be able to let go of things is huge. And that's the only way you're ever going to scale anything of significance. You're never going to get anywhere, really. You always need relationships and other people on your team.
You can only finish so much by yourself. Everybody has the exact same amount of time in the day.
Yeah. Looking back over your career, let's go back to 19-year-old Bryant. You got a couple kids, you're young, you have no idea what you're doing. If you give yourself one piece of advice, what would you tell yourself at this point from your perspective now?
Man, that's a tough one, because I know at that point in my life, I was battling back and forth with everybody on the sidelines is telling me, everybody that I'm working around is telling me to get out of the industry that I'm in.
Yeah.
But looking back on it, getting out of the industry that I was in would have been a bad idea. It gave me a lot of tools. I was able to work for many very large companies, Chevron and included in that. And you start working for companies like that that are doing multi-billion dollar projects, it allows you to expand your mind a lot. And you get to work with a lot of really smart people. I think I probably would just tell myself to work on building processes earlier.
Yeah, and that comes back to the multiple people, the scalability, all those things. And you're right, when you're sitting there talking about working with a multi-billion dollar company, Chevron and whoever else you worked with. And I think you coming from a small town background, I certainly came from a very small town background. Getting used to big numbers may not scare you as much, right? And me and you had this conversation, I don't know, last week or so, but you told me about a conversation you had where somebody said, hey, don't be scared of the extra zeros on that number, right?
Yeah, it's just extra zeros.
Yeah, and the game's kind of the same no matter what. You're just playing at different levels. And you having that experience in the big companies, it lets you maybe get a little more used to those extra zeros.
Yeah, absolutely. We were working some of these jobs, you know, a small cap project's going to be $10 million on these. So you definitely get used to bigger numbers coming across the board. And especially in the project management role, you're watching these numbers pretty closely. So I'm very, very thankful that I had that opportunity to be able to understand that there are people out there playing it on much bigger numbers than $20,000 houses.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I would say that was probably one of the bigger things, especially at the beginning of my business, is not realizing and coming from a very small rural area that there are higher levels to the game, once again, and realizing that you don't have to play it small. And it took me forever to get to that point, to realizing like, yeah, those, they're just bigger numbers. The work's the same. And honestly, in my industry, as you climb up and work with some of those bigger numbers and bigger clients, in a lot of ways, it becomes easier because my business is all like relationships, really. And typically, not 100% of the time, but typically when you get higher up level, you're dealing with, I would say, more mature or more emotionally intelligent people, and it can be a lot easier to do the work.
Yeah, it definitely is. And there's something to be said about that in real estate too. Obviously, there's many different real estate classes or I guess, asset classes rather. And each one of them has its own nuance, but some of them are definitely easier. And the ones that involve bigger numbers do get easier. As that top line revenue increases, there's just more flexibility, more tax incentives, and just more things that you can do. You can be more flexible.
Yeah. And as you've grown in scale, you can solve bigger problems now. And honestly, I assume you would agree with this statement, but like, you're playing in a smaller pool of competition, right? You're doing deals where 90% of the market can't even consider doing. And tell me if I'm speaking out of turn, but I feel like, you know, the market you play is obviously not the low end of the market, but it's also not the crazy high end where you're not competing against private equity and all these different massive monies that can come in, but that nice medium multifamily stuff to where there's a lot of opportunities because there's very few people can solve those problems.
Yeah, we're playing in a field that is not that it's not touched. There's still competition in it, but much less competition than a deal that everybody can purchase. And then it's too small for institutional quality people. They're generally looking for a couple 150 units or something like that. Yeah. So they're looking to place capital. We're looking to place capital, but we're just looking to place it, and we'll work harder for it, I guess. Yeah. That's pretty much, That's the only difference.
So, you know, you're the CEO of Ingram Capital. Just give us a little more about the business and what you guys are doing and just what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. So ultimately, after flipping so many houses, I've done some syndications over the past of that and always get the question like, hey, how do we invest with you? And honestly, that was a difficult question for me because whenever you start dealing with other people's money, it's much different.
It's a little scarier.
And it's way scarier. Yeah. So you start trying to figure that out and navigate those waters. I actually went back to school after trying to learn this. Mm-hmm. So I went back to school at Harvard for alternative investments and learned a lot about alternative investments, how other people do it. And so now we operate and own a group of funds where we syndicate, we'll take other investors' money, and then we place that into much larger assets than anybody could purchase by themselves. And we have a property management company, construction company, and the capital company. So we run the entire stack so we can really control things and keep costs in line. So our big goal is that we can take the person that maybe is a professional at their job and doesn't have the time to invest, doesn't want to learn how to invest, or just wants to become a passive investor. And we'll take that capital, we'll place it into an asset that's got a cash flow for a super long time and give great returns on a monthly basis. So
that's what you're doing. And getting to know you, Ryan, I've peeled back the curtain a little bit and see how you guys, the detail and really the process you guys have of underwriting deals like this. It's not just something, you find a deal and say, that looks good and let's buy it.
Yeah, no. We've underwritten and said no to over $250 million worth of deals, and it's March 14th.
that's year to date, right?
This year.
This year. That's pretty cool. And knowing a little bit about you and the network you've built up there, you've created a nice deal flow opportunities that come across your desk a lot, right?
Yeah, we have a tremendous amount of deal flow. We're probably getting sent 15, 20 deals a day, a week. It varies up and down, but it's a tremendous amount of deal flow. And there's a lot of them that actually don't ever make it to underwriting. We'll look at them and we have a back of the napkin that takes about 5 minutes and kick a bunch of them out. And then we do what's called hanging around the rim. We'll say, hey, by the way, Payton, we really liked your deal, but we're way off base on it. Call us back later if something doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And we actually get a lot of deal flow from that. Whenever the broker or the seller goes out to market, the market speaks and says, hey, we can't pay that.
Yeah.
We'll get a lot of opportunity on that side. And that's probably 80 to 90% of our actual purchases come from that.
Yeah. When they go out to the market and reality slaps them in the face of what their assets actually worth, right?
Yeah. Or we've had deals that went under contract and then they didn't trade. And then they come back 6, 8, 9 months later and say, hey, would you be interested?
Yep.
It's like, yeah, just not at your number now. Yep. So
Yeah. That's what it is, man. It's solving problems and solving big problems and solving big problems. That's where a lot more of the money's at.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If people like what they hear and like what you have to say, what's the best way for people to reach out to you or contact with you or just get in touch with you?
Yeah, so our website's always a good one, ingramcapital.fund. And then I'm super active on LinkedIn as well. And that's just Bryant Dawson on LinkedIn.
Yeah, very cool. So yeah, guys, you're interested in Ingram Capital and Bryant, they're launching their new fund here in late March of 24. And yeah, there are some great guys to check out.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you found it valuable, please rate, review, and share it. That is the best way to help us build this and reach more people. As we're trying to accomplish our goal of help creating more healthy, wealthy, and wise entrepreneurs. You can follow us on social media by searching for me, Payden Squires, or going to paydensquires.com. On the website and social media, we're always sharing tips of personal growth, and there we can actually interact. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.